I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and Friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Faye Kellerman, best-selling mystery author of the new book, Gun Games. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. Today is a secular festival in American tradition, the ever-growing monolith of Super Bowl Sunday, the most viewed television event in America. The facts surrounding this hugely overblown football game are somewhat astonishing. For example, 1 billion people will see it, or part of it anyway. 8 million pounds of avocados will be used today just for guacamole dip at Super Bowl parties. 30-second commercials cost $2.8 million, and 9 of the top 10 TV shows of all time are Super Bowls. Oh, and far more people will attend Super Bowl parties today than go out on New Year's Eve. Yes, football. The Jewish angle on all of this hoopla includes the fact that the owner of the New England Patriots, Robert Kraft, is Jewish and is actively involved in many Jewish causes, including having built the Kraft Family Football Stadium in Israel, and that the majority minority owner of the New York Giants, Steve Tisch, it's complicated, but he was the one who received the Lombardi Trophy when the Giants beat the Patriots in the 2007 Super Bowl. Steve Tisch is also Jewish and the only guy who has ever won both an Oscar for producing Forrest Gump and a Super Bowl ring. And one of the Giants linebackers, perhaps the best story of all in the lead-up to the Super Bowl, is a guy named Mark Herzlich, who is a cancer survivor who nearly died of Ewing sarcoma in college, was told he'd never walk again, and yet will likely dress for and maybe play in the Super Bowl. Mark Herzlich is also Jewish, the descendant of Jews who fled Austria when the Nazis took over in the Anschluss. Mark's grandfather, Morris, left nearly everything behind to escape Nazi persecution, made it safely to England, and eventually boarded his family on a ship bound for New York, the same ship that carried Mark's maternal grandmother to the States before it was sunk by a German submarine, a U-boat, on the way back. Quite a survival story. And pretty great stuff for a guy, Mark Herzlich, who is a true survivor himself. And let us not forget the Jewish angle on the Super Bowl halftime show superstar Madonna, who is renowned for her adherence to Kabbalah and her various trips to Israel with her Kabbalah Center rabbi and mentor, Phil Berg. Okay, maybe we can forget about Madonna, or at least try to. Ah, back to football. But the most interesting Jewish story on the Super Bowl so far comes from the conservative movement, thanks to our devoted Two Jewish listener and volunteer researcher, Simon Rosenblatt, who found a publication they have just released called Halacha at Halftime, a Super Bowl source sheet. I am not making this up. This useful educational publication includes the citation on not using any pigs' carcasses if you're a Jew, because, of course, pigs are considered to be unclean. While this would seem to rule out Jews playing football with pigskins, that was supposedly the original material used to make footballs, but, of course, they don't actually use pigskin anymore, just cowhide and synthetic stuff. The other major Jewish law element involved in the Talmud that the rabbinical assembly helpfully provided for Super Bowl use, assuming you can tear yourself away from the commercials, which are actually sometimes better than the game, is a comment from the tractate Avodah Zarah, which deals with pagan worship. It states tellingly that one who goes to the theaters of the idolaters, if he yells because of necessity, it's permitted. But if he intends to yell, this is forbidden. Aha. That raises the question of whether cheering and yelling for football teams therefore constitutes an actual violation of Jewish law. Well, I guess it depends on which team you cheer for. Now, if the owners are both Jewish and some of the players are Jewish, does that absolve you of potential sin? But there's more here. The Talmud goes on to add, one who sits in the amphitheater of the gladiators is like a murderer. Rabbi Natan permits it for two reasons, because he may shout and save lives, and because he may give testimony, enabling a woman to remarry. Now, to understand this, you have to go back to the days of the true blood sport, when gladiators killed each other for human amusement in that heartfelt Roman world. The rabbis found this to be anathema, morally inexcusable, as would we. However, in today's Super Bowl, players only crush and maim each other, inducing terrible orthopedic injuries and concussions, but typically nobody dies. So, as long as we restrict ourselves from shouting and no ball players are completely actually killed during the game, we should be okay. Oh good, we can watch. What a relief. Yes, leave it to the conservative movement to provide interesting and unhelpful traditional texts for this football occasion. In any case, there is also an actually Jewish holiday this week, the minor but inspirational festival of Tu B'Shvat, the new year for trees. This ecological holiday celebrates God's gift of the natural world, including the trees that give us avocados, which we use to make guacamole for the Super Bowl. Do you see how it all ties in? And so to officially play us in this morning, here's a song for Tu B'Shvat, actually coming up this Wednesday. It's called Shir HaSadeh, the Song of the Field, sung by Yehoram Gaon.
Al Sadeh Urad Ha'erev Alata Al Nirva Gam Uvatel Merach HaNevet עוד צומח הדגן מי יגן על תעצתנו את לחמנו מי ימצור כנף הליל מי שמר לבוקר החלום חלום נפתן לאור מי יגן על תפסדנו את לחמנו מנצור כנף הליל מי שמר לבוקר החלום חלום נפתן לאור
That was Shir HaSadeh, sung by Yehoram Gaon for Tu B'Shvat this coming week. Speaking of popular events like the Super Bowl, see, it all does tie in. Our guest this morning, author Faye Kellerman, has written 27 books and sold tens of millions of copies of them, mostly featuring her fictional detective duo, the Orthodox Jewish character Rena Lazarus and her husband, Peter Decker. Find out how she does it and why when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Hi, Joe Spina of Mama's Pizza. You know, lots of restaurants offer great food and service, but not all restaurants also offer life lessons. For example, learning to share is a lesson that families try to instill in their kids at an early age. At Mama's, we're here to help. For example, order a slice of pepperoni pizza. One hungry person can definitely eat it, but it's pretty huge, which means you could share it with your kid. What a great example you'd be setting. You're sharing something that you love with someone you love. Or get a family-sized calzone. It's really huge. When your family is stuffed, you could share the leftovers with your parents-in-law. It's a generous act that demonstrates your kindness and also might earn you several nights of babysitting. Or order a slice of Mama's delicious cheesecake. The portion is generous, which means, nah, let's not go overboard with the sharing idea. Mama's Pizza with four convenient locations. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Faye Kellerman, the famed mystery author. Faye was born in St. Louis, Missouri, grew up in Sherman Oaks, California. Got a degree in math and a doctorate in dentistry at UCLA, the finest institution of higher learning in the world, since it's, of course, my alma mater, and conducted research in oral biology. Her first novel, The Ritual Bath, was published in 1986 and won a whole bunch of awards about a mikveh and a great deal more, and introduced readers to Peter Decker and Rena Lazarus, now one of the most famous mystery detective couples, police detective couples, I guess I would say, in American literature. Her newest book is called Gun Games, and it's really sort of an adolescent thriller, just published. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well. Tell us a little bit about how you came to write your latest Decker Lazarus thriller, and what prompted you to focus more on this particular demographic?
I've always loved writing about adolescents. I've written quite a few books prior to this that featured adolescents. One of them was The Forgotten, and one of them was Justice, in which I introduced a character then called Chris Whitman, who became Chris Donati, and he was a very, very popular character. This book, Gun Games, features his son, now 15 years later, who has grown up, Gabe Whitman, and I just decided to revisit that whole side of that book, and it was just ball writing it.
You always integrate a great deal of Jewish content into your books because of the Orthodox background of Rena. Tell us a little bit about how that interplays in stories where most of the people aren't really Jewish.
I try to make my stories above all entertaining. I don't want to be preachy. I don't want to be a textbook. I want it to be a fast-paced, wonderfully written mystery, a thriller. All that being said, if you can interject your stories with something a little bit exotic, something a little bit more interesting, and something that's close to your heart, as my Judaism is, that's all good and fine, and my readers seem to really enjoy that. I don't write for any specific demographic. I don't write for any specific purpose other than what I'm interested in writing about. But because I'm Jewish, I'm observant or traditional, and I love my religion, if I can interject a little bit of that into my stories in a very natural way, I'm very happy to do that. And the readers seem to really enjoy it as well.
Well, I certainly do. We'll talk much more with Faye Kellerman in a few moments when we come back on Too Jewish. Among my most pleasant and least time-consuming duties, I have the honor of serving as president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, which celebrates the memories of Rabbi Samuel S. and A. Irma Kohan, my grandparents. Once a year, the foundation gives a substantial cash award to an individual for outstanding service to Klal Yisrael, the total Jewish people. This service can involve any one of four different fields: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. If you know anyone who might qualify for the 2012 Kohan Award, just visit our website, kohanaward.com, that's KOHANAward.com, and you can find the nomination form there. And while you're there, you can also learn just who my own grandparents were and who participates in honoring their memory today. That's CONAWARD.com, CohanAward.com. It's a good visit and a great place to learn about a terrific award and all the recipients.
At Handmaker's Senior Day programs, variety and interesting activities help Barbara Sanders really enjoy her time there.
They have a lot of activities that I like to do. They have ceramics, they have painting, they have sewing. We go out to the museums and to the parks, and we also go to the casino.
Handmaker helps seniors and disabled individuals maintain their independence longer than they might otherwise. Handmaker's flexible scheduling makes the Senior Day program very convenient, and Barbara feels right at home.
The staff is very nice. They take good care of you. They'll make sure that you have everything you need.
And there are other benefits, too.
All of my grandchildren have piggy banks that I've made from here, and I have a lot of ceramics in my house now because of here.
Call Handmaker at 322-7035 for more information and a complimentary one-day pass. There are new people and new friends to meet.
They're not just friendships. You know, you actually are a part of a family.
Handmaker Senior Day Program serves all faiths, centrally located on Rosemont, just south of TMC. Call 322-7035.
If you have a question, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or downloading us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as popular podcasts. The Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with Rabbi Sam Kohan is set for May 30th to June 10th of 2012. If you're interested in going with me on this fantastic journey to Israel, please email twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Israel Center. Boker Tov, Guy.
Boker Tov, Tu Bishvat Sameach.
Tu Bishvat Higia Chag Ha'ilanot. Tu Bishvat is here, the festival of trees, one of the four New Years in the Mishnah, the New Year for trees. Kind of an odd festival, really, but a lot of fun. Tell us what's going on with the Israel Center.
Yeah, you know, in a way, you might say that all those Jews and Israelis, they are tree huggers, right? We celebrate a birthday for trees. This year, we're doing on February 9th, This Thursday, between 5 and 6:30 p.m. at the JCC, a great Tu Bishvat party, arty party. We have four artists visiting us from Israel. They will lead workshops that will combine the theme of trees and our care for the environment with arts from Israel. You get a chance to come and have a hands-on experience with a lot of fun, a light supper, a light dinner, music, and celebrate. Celebrate nature. Celebrate the fun of trees. It's need to be said that in Israel, the element of trees is very significant. Israel was probably the only Western country that ended the millennium with more trees than it had 100 years ago.
Isn't that a fabulous statistic?
That's it's right. Amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. And I remember as a kid, you know, every Tu Bishvat, we would go out with the teacher to the field and plant a tree. Every year you would go out and plant a tree, physically plant it, and then you could go out and see it grow. And that's amazing. That's very, very amazing. And from a Jewish perspective, planting trees in the Holy Land, in the land of Israel, in our homeland, is a mitzvah. It's something that is considered, you know, it's extremely important. It's amazing to see that even in the Torah, you are not allowed to cut down a tree once it was planted, if it's a tree that gives fruits. So trees are very strong in our culture, and this festival will be a whole family fun event with a lot of crafts, a lot of doing, a lot of fun together, celebrating with nature, with the trees, and with our artists from Israel, a unique experience, once in a lifetime.
Sounds fantastic. Have a wonderful Tu Bishvat. Chag Tu Bishvat Sameach. We'll talk next week.
Chag Tu Bishvat Sameach.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant at the J Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Now, this is a really obvious question to ask, but what's cooking at Janos?
Greatness, wonderful food, wonderful flavors, great experiences, beautiful atmosphere, terrific views, that's about it.
You know, I have to say, it is really one of the most magnificent restaurant experiences you can have, not just in the Southwest, but in the world.
Well, thanks, Rabbi. You know, we have three restaurants now, but Yanos is the flagship. That's where we put everything into it. All the elegance, all of the love, all of the caring. That's the peak of what we do.
So for a very special night, or just because you want to have a spectacular meal, how can they get in touch with you?
Just give us a call, 615-6100. Go to our website, www.janos.com. We'll be happy to see you.
That's JANOS.com. Thanks, Janos.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking last week about the Bulgarian Jewish community. It's Ladino, it's Sephardic origins. Back they speak Ladino, most of them. And they were their salvation during World War II by the king, at least the officially Bulgarian Jews. Let's talk a little bit more about what happened to Bulgarian Jews under the Soviets and in more contemporary times.
Okay, so after World War II, when the bulk of Bulgarian Jewry survived, Bulgaria, like many countries in that region, fell under the less than fully benevolent rule of the Soviet Union.
Behind the Iron Curtain.
Right. It was definitely behind the Iron Curtain. And it was so loyal to the Soviets that it was often referred to by them and others as the 16th Republic, in addition to the 15 that were legally part of the Soviet Union. Under Todor Zhivkov, Bulgarian, like, virtually never showed even a millimeter of independent foreign policy initiative, economic initiative, whatever. It really hewed very closely to the Soviet line on everything, except, interestingly, to the Soviet line on Jews. It allowed many Jews to leave for Israel in the years between the end of the war and the early 50s. And there's a large and important Bulgarian Jewish community in Israel, much of which has come back to visit or to reclaim property or to establish commercial relations. There's a pretty strong Israeli presence in Bulgaria. When I was posted there as a diplomat, the Israeli embassy was fairly active, and in fact, the ambassador's wife at the time was a woman who had been a member of the Mishlachat, the Israeli sort of presence at Camp Ramon, Wisconsin, when I was on the staff there in the late 60s and early 70s.
It is a very small Jewish world, isn't it?
Right. And we shared very pleasant memories of Conover, Wisconsin together over many meals. But the community never really went totally underground. They were always officially tolerated and granted some degree of autonomy within carefully defined Soviet parameters. And then finally, after the Iron Curtain fell and Zhivkov was confined to house arrest in a house about two blocks from mine, the synagogue was renovated by money that came from the entire Jewish world. And there's a beautiful old central synagogue in downtown Sofia, and of course there's a Chabad presence and other presences that have tended to reinvigorate the Jewish community, which never disappeared. So, for example, when I was there as a diplomat, one of the closest advisors to the president was a Jewish guy who was overtly Jewish and sort of pro-Israel, and another guy who was running something called the Atlantic Club that was very pro-West, pro-NATO, pro-EU, pro-US, et cetera, was a guy named Solomon Passy, who eventually became foreign minister and is still very active in Bulgarian politics, high profile, very visible, very openly Jewish. And I would say that officially, at least in the capital, Jews have a place and are really integrated into public life, business life, et cetera, et cetera. Countryside's another story, which I would like to discuss with you next week.
We will do so. Very interesting. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A priest, a minister, and a rabbi are playing golf, but are forced to play very slowly because there's a foursome ahead of them. The group is taking forever to play. At long last, the clergy finally complete their round and head back to the clubhouse to complain to the golf pro. The pro tells the priest, "Look, they're blind. That's why they were so slow." The priest replies, "Oh, that's very inspiring. I'm so impressed. I'm going to collect money for them by organizing a blind golfers tournament." The pro then tells the minister, "Look, they're blind. That's why they were so slow." And the minister replies, "That's so uplifting, I'm going to use them as my theme for next Sunday's sermon." The pro then tells the rabbi, "They're blind. That's why they were so slow." The rabbi replies, "Why can't they play in the dark?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. Okay, I admit that joke was terrible. No self-respecting rabbi would ever say that. Now, a temple president? Can you recite the Ten Commandments by heart? I suspect not. Most people can't. We usually remember, "Thou shalt not murder," usually misstated as "Thou shalt not kill." And we also remember, most of the time, "Thou shalt not steal." Most people kind of recall there's something in there about honoring dad and mom and not swearing. Others get the adultery part, or perhaps even the one about the Sabbath. Few people can remember all Ten Commandments. But whether we know them by heart or not, these 10 statements from this week's Torah portion of Yitro are supposed to be the only words that God ever spoke directly to our entire people. But they're not really at the heart of our Judaism today. Why not? In point of fact, we Reformed Jews have trouble with some of the Ten Commandments and struggle to find relevant ways to observe them. Nearly every commandment brings with it a problem, even the most positively phrased. What does it mean to remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy if we spend most of our Shabbat days working? I recall attending the URJ Biennial Convention a couple of years ago in Toronto, hearing Rabbi Eric Yaffe, the president, thank the delegates at services for celebrating a non-wired Shabbat, free of iPhones, Androids, and Blackberries. His remarks were immediately posted on Facebook by many of the delegates using the same smartphones they were supposed to put away for the Sabbath. Nearly all of the commandments have complications. How do we suitably honor our fathers and mothers if they are challenging or even evil people? Not murdering or stealing seems clear enough, but how can we possibly avoid being jealous of our neighbor's better job or nicer car or superior life? And don't we take God's name in vain all the time without apparent repercussions? Gosh darn it. But I believe that the commandment we have the gravest difficulty observing among Reform, Liberal, Conservative, Reconstructionist, Progressive, and all the other non-Orthodox Jews is actually the first one. It's the simple statement that there is a God who commands us at all. Classically, this statement, which contains no real commandment, has been considered by Christians a kind of preamble to the Ten Commandments, but we Jews insist on viewing it as a unique and crucial statement. Why? It is because, as logical as the Aseret HaDibrot may seem as a declaration of ethics, if we do not accept the existence of a commander, they essentially lose their power. With no commander, there is no commandee, no recipient of the command. And therefore, in practical terms, no real mitzvot, no commandments to be kept. In philosophical terms, the warrant for the authority of the Ten Commandments is in this simple statement. God exists, acts, and commands. It is why they are not called the Ten Suggestions, or the Ten Recommendations, or the Ten Nice Ideas, if you can manage them and have the time. It is only when we accept the existence of God, when we diminish our own elaborate sense of self, that we're able to partner with God to create a moral world. Only when we engage with the commander do we find the commandments. It's up to us, on this week of Parshat Yitro, to find for ourselves the one who commanded them, however we conceive of the Holy One, and to accept our role as recipients of ethical commandments. When we choose to do so, we will find that we can then be moral beings. We can shape this world in good ways, and we can observe the Ten Commandments, just as they were intended to be observed, by heart and from the heart. When we come back on Too Jewish, our guest, Faye Kellerman, will explain how a nice Jewish Orthodox woman, and a trained dentist, by the way, thinks up all those horrible murders for her books. Find out when we return in a few moments on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Attention, Arizona taxpayers, you can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime. Direct your tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. State of Arizona allows taxpayers to receive dollar-for-dollar tax credit, not deduction, for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations. This allows them to provide scholarship for kids in K through 12 at qualified private schools. JETCO provides a quality Jewish education to children in need at Temple Emmanuel Kindergarten, Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten, the Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy, THA. If you pay Arizona state taxes and make your donation today before December 31st, you'll receive 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax. Your contributions last year helped more than 100 children receive the financial aid they needed to get a Jewish education. Join over 750 supporters who gave up to $1,000 per couple, $500 per individual as a tax credit, and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income taxes. To direct your tax dollars to Jewish education today, please call 647-8442. You can do it on your credit card, 647-8442, or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Help give the gift of Jewish education.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A cache of ancient Jewish scrolls from northern Afghanistan has only recently come to light and is creating a storm among scholars who say the landmark find could reveal an undiscovered side of medieval Jewry. The 150 or so documents dated from the 11th century, that's 1,000 years ago, were found in Afghanistan's Samangan province. Most likely they were smuggled out, a common fate for the impoverished and war-torn country's antiquities. Israeli Emeritus Professor Shaul Shaked, who's examined some of the poems, commercial records, and judicial agreements that make up the treasure, said that while the existence of an ancient Afghan Jewry is known, their culture was a mystery. Here, for the first time, we see evidence and we can actually study the writings of this Jewish community. It's very exciting, Shaked said. He teaches at the Comparative Religion and Iranian Studies Department at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, the most prestigious Israeli university. The hoard is currently being kept by a private antiquities dealer in London. They have been producing a trickle of new documents over the past 2 years, which is when Shaked believes they were found and pirated out of Afghanistan in a clandestine operation. Wow, kind of Raiders of the Lost Ark stuff. It is likely they belong to Jewish merchants on the Silk Road running across Central Asia, said Michael Law, British Academy postdoc fellow at Oxford University's Center for Hebrew and Jewish Studies, one of the great collections of medieval Jewish manuscripts in the world. They might have been left there by merchants traveling, but they could also have come from another nearby area and been deposited for a reason we do not yet understand. There's a medieval Jewish group called the Radanites who traveled from Spain to China. Their existence is known from Arab documents, actually. Perhaps these documents documents will shed further light on their transactions and their lives. Cultural authorities in Kabul had mixed reactions to the fine. Scholars say it is without a doubt from Afghanistan, arguing that the Judeo-Persian language used on the scrolls is similar to other Afghan Jewish manuscripts. The Afghanistanian National Archive director, Sahi Munir, denied the find was Afghan, arguing that he would have seen it. But an advisor in the cultural ministry said it cannot be confirmed, but it is entirely possible. A lot of old documents and sculptures are not brought to us, but sold elsewhere for 10 times the price, said Jalal Norani, explaining that excavators and ordinary people who stumble across finds sell them to middlemen who auction them off in Iran, Pakistan, and Europe, or in this case, London. Unfortunately, we cannot stop this, Norani said. The cultural ministry in Afghanistan said pays an average of $1,500 for a recovered antique item. The Hebrew University Shaked estimated the Jewish documents worth at several million dollars. Interpol and U.S. officials have traced looted Afghan antiquities to helping fund insurgent activities. I am sure Afghanistan, like any country, would like to control their antiquities, but on the other hand, with this kind of interest and importance as a scholar, I can't say that I would avoid studying them, said Shaked of this extraordinary Jewish find. You know, we don't know if this 11th century Afghanistanian hoard will prove to be anything like the Cairo Geniza treasure trove of the 19th century, but it certainly is of great scholarly and historical importance. And our News of the Weird reports that a Newt Gingrich robocall told Florida voters that Holocaust survivors were forced to eat non-kosher because of Mitt Romney. As governor of Massachusetts, Mitt Romney vetoed a bill paying for kosher food for our seniors in a nursing home, said the call. Holocaust survivors who for the first time were forced to eat non-kosher because Romney thought $5 was too much to pay for our grandparents to eat kosher. Romney vetoed a bill in 2003 that aimed to cover cuts in state and federal funding that would have closed kosher kitchens in some facilities for the elderly. The nursing homes, meantime, sought outside suppliers of kosher meat. In the end, the legislature overrode Romney's veto. There is no evidence that anyone who wanted a kosher meal went without, or that Holocaust survivors would necessarily have been targeted by the measure or affected by it, which in any case didn't happen. And of course, Romney pounded Gingrich in Florida in spite of the robocalls. Perhaps there is sometimes justice in this world. Although he did veto the funding. Oh, never mind. And that's the News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish, our guest this morning, the New York Times best-selling author many times, Faye Kellerman. Her new book is called Gun Games. It's another Decker Lazarus police detective novel of great tension and really very entertaining book. How many books have you published? Do you remember offhand?
I think it's about 26 total. That includes one-off, those that are not in the series, but also includes a couple of novellas that I co-authored with my husband, Jonathan Kellerman, and I think it includes one young adult novel that I've co-authored with my daughter, Aliza Kellerman, when she was 15 or 16, and now she's 19, so time really does go very, very quickly.
Boy, it does. So what's it like writing with, first of all, your husband, who's, of course, a distinguished author in his own right, Jonathan Kellerman, and then especially with a 15-year-old daughter?
We did that very well. I can't think of two groups that would be harder to write with than an adolescent daughter and your husband. The way that we did it with Jonathan was a good preview for the way I approached it with my daughter. In both cases, the outlines were, we did it together. We outlined the book. We did the characterization together. We did the plot together. We gave the feeling that we wanted together. We did kind of everything chick-chock. And then when we came to actually writing the book with my husband, he would write a novella and then email it to me. And I would fix it up and email back to them, and then we went back and forth and back and forth until we got a product that was a combination of both of us. So the voice was not distinctly his or mine, but more ours. in Elise's case, when we wrote Prism, I was working on my own novels. So I said to Elisa, I will outline and I will edit, but I cannot write. I have to work on my own novels. This is in your, you know, your court. She took the ball and just ran with it. She actually wrote the novel. And again, when she got stuck or she had a question, it was all done email. So without the nuances of facial features and all the nonverbal communication, it made it much cleaner.
When you decide to write another novel, and there's so many people that get killed in your books, how do you do the research for that?
That's the easy part. Police stations and police agencies are pretty open, and some you use with a realistic background, but you always take liberties and you take a poetic license. It doesn't have to be. In my books, it's not important for me to get every single police procedural detail. If you want to do that, write nonfiction. What's important to me is getting characterization, A. I always look at a book with my characters first, and then getting a riveting plot. And, of course, after you've got those two, you want to execute. You want to write the book as well as you possibly can. And after so many novels, you've written a lot of stories, you've developed a lot of characters. It's hard not to repeat yourself. That's the challenge.
I would think so. What inspired you to start writing detective fiction?
I like detective fiction. As you said, I was a math major. I was a dentist. Both of those things require kind of an ABC approach to whatever they do. It's very logical. You have to go from one step to the other. If you mess up one step, the outcome isn't going to be good. And that's why I like mysteries. They're usually beginnings, middles, and ends. It just appealed to my pattern, my psychological makeup to do things in an organized manner. I'm probably not the most neatest person on the planet, but I am very organized, and I am very compulsive about what I do. And mysteries appeal to that aspect of me. The other thing I like about thrillers and crime fiction is you can talk about social injustice, you can talk about injustice in general, and you can right wrongs that you can't do in real life. That is really fun.
Now that's a real Jewish focus, the whole notion of justice and the centrality of justice. Do you think that's where it comes from for you?
It is a focus in Judaism. I mean, tzedakah means justice. It doesn't mean charity. It means righting wrongs. I don't know. I think primarily it comes, that kind of inner drive comes from the individual human being. It can be reinforced by things like religion and, you know, family politics and everything like that, but I think it's something that's more innate in whoever you are. I just think that the world is increasingly complex, although I suppose it always was. We just hear about it more because mass media is instantaneous. And it's a good way to navigate your own world if you can, you know, create your own steps.
You know, I think of Tzedek Tirdof, the pursuit of justice and the focus on justice, but there's a playful aspect to these, and I know it sounds strange. You're talking about people getting murdered, people getting sent away for murder one. You know, you must have fun kind of plotting these things out.
I have fun seeing how the characters I had envisioned develop on their own. They do take on a life of their own. This specific book, Gun Games, had a lot to do with adolescence, and I love that period of time because it's so malleable. And it's so fluid. They're in between, you know, adulthood and childhood, and they have adult drives and aspirations, but their brains are not fully myelinated yet. So it's really fun to work with this subset of human beings, and they do risk taking activities. So it's a normal kind of thing, and it's a beautiful. It fits very well with mystery novels because when you have risks, certain things happen, and that's what you write about.
What authors inspired you? Who did you look to when you started? Do you still look to anybody for inspiration?
I look for everything for inspiration. There are some authors, when they ask me to quote what books are meaningful to me. Fiction authors, of course, Chaim Potok, because this was the first time Judaism was made accessible to the a large audience. And I said, wow, you know, if you do it in an interesting way and have interesting characters, you can write about anything. And, of course, I love all the hard-boiled California mystery writers. Specifically, Ross McDonald was a big influence on me. He wrote so many of them, and each one had a sameness about it, but each one was very, very different. And his use of the language was absolutely superb. He was a beautiful writer. I also read a great deal of nonfiction, and not crime fiction. I like biographies. I like historical nonfiction where they talk about science. I have a science background. I find all of these things very, very inspirational. And then when I need even to think about and to integrate everything that I'm thinking about, I take a lot of long walks.
I've been a mystery fiction lover since I read, Edgar Allan Poe and Conan Doyle. And it seems to me that your latest book, The Gun Games, is really a variation on the locked room mystery.
Very much so, because it has a cast of characters that are kind of a given at the outset. It takes place with some prep school suicides, I think we can say that, because that happens within the first chapter without giving anything away.
Yeah, that doesn't give away the show. I think you're safe.
That does not give away the show, and then you have your cast of characters, and it's a matter of how you suck them into getting what you need to move these cases along. And that's where, of course, and then Decker's dealing with that, and he's dealing with his own kind of foster son, Gabe Whitman, who was dumped on him from Hangman, and he really doesn't know that much about the kid. And because it's not his child specifically, and he's just finishing up his own child rearing, he doesn't take the time to know him as well as he should. So we get all sorts of complications and twists and turns, and it was really fun. It was one of those books that kind of wrote itself, because I just felt exactly where it was going.
A different turn here. You portray Orthodox Jewish life in a really interesting and sensitive way, but of course there's a... Do you get criticism from the Orthodox community sometimes?
Not really.
These are funny times. People can be criticized who are really doing things in an intelligent, sensitive way still.
No, and it's never been part of my career that I've endured a lot of criticism from my own community. They're the type of books where either they're violent and sexual and all sorts of things, and if they're too explicit or too secular and you're that religious, you're not going to read them.
Right.
But if they're more like me, they do read secular books, and this is like something that they can relate to. It's Orthodox or traditional people portrayed in a very human way, not either as religious fanatics that... cultish. It's not portrayed as a cultish kind of manner, and they really appreciate that. They really appreciate that sensitive and intelligent dialogue comes out of their mouths, and they have things of interest other than, extolling the virtues of God. They're well-rounded, well-developed people in and of themselves. Sometimes I have been told that I'm a guilty pleasure, the kind of books that they hide under the sink when they think that nobody else is looking. So that's fine. I don't mind being their paid in place.
That's great. I like that. It's funny. I remember asking Shmuley Boteach if he let his children read his books. He said absolutely not until they're older and married. And I thought, well, I'm sure that's not your approach with your daughter.
Oh, no. I mean, they don't read my books specifically. One of my daughters does. Actually, two of my daughters do because they enjoy it. But growing up, I think it was hard for them to associate their parents with certain types of literature. as of recently, my youngest, who is now 19, she will be 20, has read a couple of the books, and one of the books that she really, really enjoyed was Justice, which is features Christopher Donati, who's the father of Gabe Whitman, right, who was in Gun Game. So
I'm glad
to see that 15 years later, the book still holds sway to the people I was kind of aiming it to. That's good.
That's very good. One last question. You know, you do have one book set in Elizabethan England, The Quality of Mercy, about Shakespeare's physician, Queen Elizabeth's physician. And it was really quite a departure, I thought, in some ways. Are you planning any other historical departures?
I've written a couple of one-offs. One was Quality of Mercy. The other was Straight into Darkness. That took place in between the two world wars in Germany. A very, very dark book. And I think Moon Music, which I really, really liked, which took place with a different set of detectives, Modern Times in Las Vegas, and featured werewolves like 20 years ago. I don't know.
Before they were so popular.
They were popular, and then they had a decline, and now they're popular again
with the vampires.
Yeah, and that vampires, too. I mean, you know, Bram Stoker did it all. One of my characters way back when was named Bram, and it was in honor of him. The one-offs take a lot of time, and I don't know if there's something I'm going to jump into, but I never say never.
I want to thank Faye Kellerman for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Her new book is called Gun Games, a Decker Lazarus novel, and it's available everywhere, and it's, you know, makes a great gift. Faye, thanks very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be the excellent child psychologist, Dr. Wendy Mogul, author of the best-selling books The Blessing of a Skin Knee and The Blessing of a B-. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or our TooJewishRadio.com website, and please like us on Facebook. Our playoff this morning comes from Safam, and it's a reminder to keep smiling and preserve a positive mental attitude. My friends, may you be blessed with a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
Avram planned a nice vacation, took his boy to mountain climb. Wife thought it would give them both a chance to have some quality time. Isaac volunteered to carry the knife, the rope, and the firewood. That's a man with confidence and a positive mental attitude.
It's all right now.
Looking at the way we live.
All right.
I don't should be so negative.
It's all right now.
Always look for what is good.
It's all right.
With a positive mental attitude. Israelites were in the desert. Soon they started to complain. Reminisce about the old days. Give them water, give them food.
Stop the kvetching with the use of a positive mental attitude.
It's all right now.
Looking at the way we live.
All right.
I don't should be so negative.
It's all right now.
Always look for what is good.
It's all right.
With a positive mental attitude. You don't need no marijuana to impress your loser friends. You don't need the fashion or drive a Mercedes Benz. See the cup, is it half empty? No, the cup, it is half full. You can always